How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here. We weren't here the last couple of weeks. Actually, we were here 2 weeks ago talking the history of World Championship Wrestling, the rise and fall of WCW. We ended up doing the show 2 weeks in a row. I was down in wherever that show was, UFC on Fox, Anaheim, California, for the epic Cain Velasquez Jr. Dos Santos battle. We're going to be here talking about that fight here on this show and the fallout of UFC on Fox. Had we done the show last week, we wouldn't have had the rating, which is a very important part of this story. We're going to tell you all about that here on the program today. And there's so much news to get into. Kind of funny, I was thinking about this before the show started. Today is Survivor Series. New York City, Madison Square Garden, The Rock is returning to wrestling. Yet, many of the important topics that we have to discuss actually involve mixed martial arts. UFC 139, the Henderson Shogun show, took place last night on pay-per-view. It was, in fact, one of the best fights and one of the best pay-per-views in the history of the Ultimate Fighting Championships. There are probably too many shows. In fact, guaranteed there are too many shows. I talked to people that went to bars for the show this evening, and they said, man, the bar is usually packed. There was no one here this evening, or it was a half-full bar. There's too many shows. When you have a show every weekend, people don't go to watch every show. But if you miss this show, you missed out. This show was awesome. We're going to talk about this show, that show on this show. And last night's Strikeforce with Ronda Rousey, who, in fact, is an MMA fighter with a gimmick. When you think of pro wrestling and pro wrestling gimmicks, they're usually something goofy. Carlito was a guy who, you know, he wished everybody was cool. Ronda Rousey's gimmick is that she wins every fight in a minute with an armbar. Under 1 minute, same move. Last night, she faced Julia Budd, Friday night, Strikeforce Challengers. And the big question going into it, is Ronda Rousey going to get another armbar in under 1 minute? We'll give you the answer here on this program. Also, of course, we'll preview the Survivor Series. Talk a bunch of pro wrestling as well. There's no shortage of news, including Matt Hardy in jail. $1 million bond. Big news. All of it coming up after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by the illustrious Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet. Sports Byline USA Radio Network as well, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern every Sunday. So make sure you check us out. Last week, no new show. I was down in Anaheim for UFC on Fox. Main event of the show, which happened to be, for most of you listening, the only fight you actually got to see. Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos. And the story of that show was, a couple of days ago, I talked to my grandmother. She just turned 82. She does not watch pro wrestling. She does not watch mixed martial arts. However, this fight was on free network television. Channel 13, she noted. She wanted to give me a report on the show. She said, I really like that Brock, that Lesnar fellow. I always thought he was kind of stupid, but he seemed like he knew what he was talking about. She said, the fight was quick. That's right, I said. That fight was quick. And she said, you know, it would have been nice if they aired another fight on the show. And I said, you're preaching to the choir. Granny was your average fan. And I think for your average fan, I think that the show wasn't offensive to them in any way. It didn't turn them off to mixed martial arts. Maybe they were underwhelmed. I think that'd be the best word to use. Hardcore fans were appalled they didn't get to see the Clay Guida-Ben Henderson fight. But this show was about the average casual viewer and trying to hook that person. A person like my grandmother. And in fact, she watched the entire show. And as it turns out, she was one of almost 10 million people between Fox and Fox Deportes that saw the main event of that show, the most watched fight in the history of United States mixed martial arts, took place last Saturday. And Mike, first chance we've had to talk to you about that fight. Your thoughts on the fight and the show?
I thought the show was actually fantastic up until, well, the very end of it. You know, as far as the lead up, Dana White was obviously excited when he was up there. Kurt Menefee, who has done, you know, the intros and outros for boxing telecasts before, Was very comfortable in his role. They did a good job. I mean, just the aesthetics of the whole thing, the set, the using the NFL or using the Fox Sports music, you know, it just it gave it a familiar and a big-time feel. And they did a great job with the personality pieces and everything, which we've seen before. You know, if you've watched the countdown shows and everything, you've seen this stuff before. But they did a great job, you know, bringing that across. And that stuff matters, obviously. You know, the Mayweather-De La Hoya 24/7 proved that when you can do pieces like that, it really yanks in people. And they did a fantastic job with that. And I didn't have a problem with them making it one fight, because obviously that was a Fox decision that they were going to make. And the problem I had at the end of it was, when you had that much time remaining, and this is Fox's deal, it was Fox's, you know, call to just go, well, we can get the news on time, and you know what, it's been a pretty good night, we're happy with everything across the board, we're just going to stick to the format. That's where they screwed up, because they could have showed Henderson Guida highlights, and that it was the biggest glaring thing, as you said, about the whole show. Now, as far as the average fan and the knockout, you know, it wasn't the fact that it was a quick knockout, but for the average fan, I could see them, and I heard this a little bit from them, where, you know, it's still going to take people some time where they're not looking at a boxing glove. They have to see that it's a 4-ounce glove, and it has to see that, you know, shots that ricochet off guys, the sides of guys' heads, when they're that big, you know, throwing leather at each other, you know, that's what, you know, it wasn't one of those picture-perfect Mike Tyson-esque knockouts from back in the day, and that kind of hurt, too. Although it's a fight, there's nothing you can do about that. I still think the most damage done was the fact that they didn't show anything, and they had just too much talking on the way out. And it's not a sports thing, either, because all of those shows, when they go to wrap-ups, they always show highlights. So it seemed to be just a decision made for this show that they stuck to format because they were happy with what it was. But, yeah, they screwed it up.
I'm glad they're happy. They're very happy with the number. I know that from being backstage at the show last week, I could tell you that there were not UFC officials that were celebrating the fact that they didn't show the fight, the Guida Henderson fight. I mean, they were begging Fox to put this show on the air, this fight on the air, but it didn't happen. And based on when the main event actually went off the air, or when when that fight ended and how much of a wrap-up time they had, they realistically probably didn't have time to air Henderson and Guida, but you could have started the main event a little bit earlier. One of the other things that my grandmother said, and I keep bringing her up because she is as casual a casual fan as you could possibly find. So I look at what she has to say as, this is what your average person is saying. And she said, I was like, how's the show? And she goes, well, they talked, and then they talked, and they talked, and they talked. And I was thinking, well, when's the fight? You know, and I understand. Listen, I am not in the least against doing the personality packages. I thought that the personality package they did for both guys were great. I think you got to set the stage for the fight. I think you got to build up the fight. I think you got to get people interested. There's no sense in doing a cold open. You know, the first UFC fight in the history of network television, you know, just open the show with the fight. You got to talk to the guys or get the guys' personalities out for people. You got to make people care about the fight. But with that said, you don't need to spend 30 minutes on this. You could have done a nice 7-minute package on one guy, a 7-minute package on the other guy, throw in a couple of commercials there, throw in a little bit of talk, and you could have started the fight at about 20 after. And then if the fight ends up going a minute, which it did, you know, you still got a half hour left. So you could even have shown Henderson and Guida as a 3-round fight. It would have been 15 minutes, and you would have still had time for a wrap-up. So it is possible to do this, and they just decided that they were only going to show one fight, and that's what they did. And again, the bottom line is, Fox is happy, and it was a great number. You know, the prediction, I had the prediction that it was going to do fine. I didn't want to give a number, but I said it was going to do fine. It actually did great. When you look at the ratings that that fight did, and you consider the fact that that fight did 9 million viewers going a minute, traditionally a fight that goes 1 minute, if the fight had gone 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 rounds, the audience would have grown throughout the fight. So conceivably, had this fight gone 5 rounds or even 3 rounds, you know, conceivably we could have had 12, 15 million people watching this fight, which is astounding, astonishing. I never would have even pictured a number that high. But it very easily, realistically, could have done that number. It's amazing.
It really is. It absolutely is. You know, peaking at 8 point, that's just, it's insane. We used to look at those numbers from Japan on New Year's Eve, and obviously they don't touch that like the Bob Sapp fights. But we used to look at those numbers in the States and just think, Jesus, can you imagine even being on network TV, let alone getting millions and millions of people? But, yeah, I mean, great start. And really, when it comes to the start time, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, depending on your philosophy. I mean, you could have started it a little bit earlier and cut down on the packages, but, you know, at the same time, you make the case which, you know, they obviously did, which, well, it was the first time, and this is the way we wanted to do it, and really nobody's wrong in that exchange. The only wrong part is, you know, the UFC can do highlight packages on the fly. I mean, they're pros at it. They do it now leading into, you know, short fights. I mean, God, you got four fights tonight on Spike for free because they were able to edit things on the fly, and they can do those things, and that's the bottom line is, they just screwed up by you know, Fox screwed up by not letting them do that, and because it didn't matter when it ended, you still had enough time for the UFC production crew to whip together a package that would fit time with Henderson and Guida in it.
It was a great show live. Henderson and Guida was one of the best fights that, well, then we had the Henderson fight tonight. We'll talk about that later. Two great Henderson fights weekend to weekend, back to back. But before we get into that, one last thing about the show and the number. It is now a week later, and I was there. Most of the people listening to this watched the fight. Everybody had their opinions the next day. But here it is, 7-8 days later, and things have calmed down. We've had another UFC. And I think that after a week has gone by, when you look forward to the next UFC on Fox, you know, the idea that the fight went by really fast, there was really nothing to it, there was a minute of fighting in 1 hour, and there was disappointment, there were the people that said, meh, you know, is that it? But the reality is, after a week of sitting here and thinking about this and moving on with life, I think that the next time that UFC airs on Fox, not a single person will have been turned off by this show. It's just the way things are. It's very much like pro wrestling and MMA and anything else, you know. Something happens and people get very, very angry, whether it's a bad judging decision or they felt like they got screwed on a pro wrestling finish, and they get really, really mad, and they rant and they rave. And realistically, the next time the show comes along, if enough time has passed, they go and watch it again. And I think that's how it's going to be with UFC on Fox. I don't think any damage was done by the show. We'll get Mike's thoughts on this after the break. Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also WrestlingObserver.com, host of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare on the website. We'll talk more about that later, getting his thoughts on UFC on Fox. Before we went to the break, I gave my thoughts on the next show, the reaction to the next show. And Mike, was damage done by this show, in your opinion?
Not at all. You know, the hardcore fans who have been with UFC a long time and swear they have their own opinions on what things should be, you know, they're not going to be happy. You know, obviously it didn't go perfectly for maybe the new fan coming in, so you're hoping to hook them again next time around. But realistically, they will. You know, they may not sustain the number that they had for this next time around, but I don't think anybody should be surprised by that. It'll be a two-hour show. There's going to be multiple fights on it, but I'll bet you this. I bet you it actually spikes higher. You know, the rating won't be, you know, the greatest all the way across the board for the 2 hours, like this averaged out to be. But I guarantee you it probably peaks higher for one of the fights on the show, probably the main event, probably at the end of the night. And that's, you know, again, that's a good sign for the UFC and for Fox. They're obviously happy with the way everything went. And, you know, I was up in D.C. for a football game, so I missed, you know, initially seeing the show. I had to see it on the DVR, but on the way home, I turned on Fox Sports Radio, and they had a pregame show. They had a postgame show. They took nothing but calls about the UFC all night long. They played the fight live. They replayed the fight a little bit later on. They had fighters calling in, Brian Stan, Uriah Faber, talking to guys like that all night long. Fox has gone all out, and I think that's the, no matter what, that's the biggest thing here. George Greenberg's appointment to start up or to help out Fuel earlier on this year, you know, was part of a bigger plan for that network, which the UFC ended up fitting right into. I mean, it's Dana White's talked about it, and again, there's a ridiculous amount of programming and emphasis by Fox that's going to take place for the UFC. So, again, any of the bumps in the road that they're going to have right now should be ironed out. And, again, they're going to have the time and the money and the backing to do so.
When I was doing play-by-play for the Henderson-Guida fight, when it was over, I said, "Fight of the year!" And now here we are, and it's a week later. Last night, another Henderson went in there, UFC 139. Dan Henderson, Shogun Hua. And when that fight was over, I thought, that was one of the best fights of all time. And the announcer said the same thing. It was an amazing... Sometimes you hear, man, that was a battle. This was a war. This was a war. These two men, I don't even know. I have no better way to explain it than you had two guys that went to war, died, and then they kept fighting. That's what happened last night in the main event of UFC 139.
And, repeatedly.
Yeah, it was a very different sort of fight than Henderson and Guida. Henderson and Guida was, and I realize it's strange to say since Clay Guida is a caveman, but it's a far more technical fight than last night's battle. And it's not like last night's battle was not a technical fight either. It was just two completely different fights. Neither Henderson nor Guida got tired. And Dan Henderson and Shogun Hua both got very tired. And I don't even know how they kept going. But they kept going and going and going. And it was amazing. It was an amazing fight. And where would you rank that, Mike, in terms of best fights of all time?
It's so hard because, you know, it's hard not to be reactionary. It's in the top. I'm trying to think because afterwards, too, it's like, where does this whole show rank? And that includes the Facebook fights and the Spike. I mean, when you combine the whole thing together, this card was, again, I mean, there's been Pride Grand Prix and stuff like that. But you could say in the modern era, this is arguably the best, and that was arguably the best fight. And I know there's Bonner Griffin and what it means when you add all that into it and all of this stuff, but this was an amazing fight. And two men being dragged back to their corners after the fourth round. Dan Henderson dominating, basically, pretty much dominating the first three rounds of the fight, and then, boom, turning around where Shogun controls the last two and just smothering him the entire fifth round. It was those men died a million times and then kept coming back, and it was absolutely amazing. It was just an incredible, incredible fight that, you know, I would have felt bad for those guys for everything they put into it to have heard at the end of it that it went to a draw. But realistically, I mean, with the way, if Shogun could have just done a little bit more in that last round, he basically smothered Henderson for 5 minutes. Yet Henderson kept just barely was able to stay alive. And Shogun just couldn't do enough. If he would have gotten a 10-8 round there, then we would have been talking about a draw. And really, no one could complain about anything.
I thought it was going to be a draw. It's kind of funny because many times we talk about the 10-point must, and if ever there was a fight where in a 5-round fight, I don't know. It's like when this fight was over, it's one of those deals where had this gone, I mean, if there had been no time limits and the fight just kept going and going, Shogun was winning this fight.
You know, if this was Pride, he would have won the fight.
He was winning the fight at the end of the fight, at the end of the fifth round. And I mean, Henderson had just nothing left except his heart. And Shogun was attempting to crush it in his hands. But Henderson just kept coming. But this was classic 10-point must. That being that Henderson won the first three rounds. And Hua won the second, the final two rounds. And I was looking at the scorecard just going, okay, let me think about this here. If the last round is a 10-8 for Shogun, then it's going to be a draw. If you give that round 10-8 and you give Dan a 10-8 for one of the earlier rounds, then Dan wins. If you don't give the final round a 10-8, then Dan wins. And I was sitting there just going, man, he killed this dude in the last two rounds, but there's no way he can win this fight. He cannot possibly win this fight due to 10-point must. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. I gave the last run a 10-8. I had it a draw. The announcers, or the it was actually a unanimous decision from the judges, 48-47 to Henderson. Nobody gave any round a 10-8. That is the most astonishing thing of all. But I thought the I was actually sitting there thinking, okay, no matter what the decision, the people are just going to boo like crazy. But that didn't happen. The fans went nuts for the fight because it was one of the greatest fights in UFC history. And Dan Henderson wins. And presumably at some point he's going to get a championship match out of this. But this was a war.
I did not give any 10-8s. But the thing was, I mean, I don't think there's going to be that much outrage because Henderson did, for the most part, beat the crap out of him through, for the first three rounds. I mean, you know, it's not like Shogun didn't get, you know, some chances. I mean, but really, you know, Henderson dropped him in the third round, you know, who recovered enough to grab a leg and was able to make his way back up to his feet, and they both scored. But Henderson scored, was able to basically kind of time Hua for those first three rounds and really evade or deflect most of his punches. So, I mean, the first three rounds were so clearly to him. And again, what killed to me Shogun in that fifth round was, yeah, he if you're going to be dominant for 5 minutes, you got to do more than what he did to get a 10, you know, a 10-8 round. I mean, there was halfway, this could be a call for half point scoring as well if you're one of those people into that camp. But you know what, Henderson, I'm sorry, just because of the way the fight went, you almost want to give him a point for just surviving.
Yeah, it was either, I mean, I don't care if you call it a draw or you give the fight to Henderson, but it's one or the other. You really can't give the fight to Hua, despite his performance in those last two rounds. And a funny fact here on this five-rounder, the referee in the beginning of the third round said, "Last round!" And Dan had to look up and hold up five fingers as if to indicate, no, it's a five-rounder here. So the referee apparently was asleep on the job. And, in fact, a lot of the fans in the building, on both sides of the building, after the end of round three, fans got up and they started to leave. And then as soon as the horn sounded again, they all turned and rushed back to their seats. Because apparently a lot of them were unaware that this was a five-rounder as well. But an absolute epic battle. One of the things that I was thinking when this fight was over was, can you imagine if this fight had aired on Fox? And I want to get your opinion on this because my initial thought was, oh man, can you imagine if the world would have seen this fight, what it would have done for UFC? But then after I thought about it for a while, it was like, you know, the world would have been better off seeing Henderson and Guida. Because that was also an awesome fight, but it displayed athleticism. It was not a double juice match. It was not two corpses being dragged back to the corner and then shoved back in to keep fighting. This actually, as great as this fight was, this probably wasn't the best fight to show the world.
I you know what? I would actually say that, but you know what? After tonight, I disagree. You know what the world would have wanted to see, even if it would be for all of the wrong reasons? The world would have wanted to see the mainstream fan, Kung Lee and Wanderlei Silva from tonight. That's the one they would have wanted to see. Because you got, obviously, no ground game. You didn't get that. But you got Kung Lee hitting 709,000 million types of kicks and Wanderlei Silva almost being dead several times. In fact, Kung almost being dead several times. This was probably, to me, and again, I would have rather have seen Guida and Henderson, but to me, the fight tonight, that would have been the aesthetic one that I think would have, that's the one that jars the mainstream sports fan, and then you follow it up with Henderson and Shogun from tonight with the 25 minutes. Again, nothing would be wrong for that one to be on Fox, but realistically, Kung Lee and Wanderlei Silva tonight probably would be the one the mainstream fan would salivate for first.
I actually, if you're going to ask me about what fight would I put on Fox tonight, I would have put on the Faber fight, to be honest with you. The thing about, I enjoyed the Kung Lee fight with Wanderlei Silva, but the problem with it was, one of the things you always hear from critics of UFC is, these guys don't know how to box. They're terrible boxers. And I just think if you would have put that fight on television, people would have looked at Kung Lee's wacky kicks and both guys getting tired and go, man, these guys suck compared to boxers. But I'll get your opinion on this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates, newsletters, the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Dave Meltzer has published since 1983, a classic, legendary, the Wrestling Observer, and less legendary, but it's full color and it's got pictures. Figure Four Weekly, also available on the website. In addition, radio shows. If you love this show and you only get here one time a week, you are listening out, or you are missing out on your listening. You'll be all listened out if you signed up. I did three shows on Thursday. Three shows in one day. We do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. If you love this show, I've said this a million times, if you love Wrestling Observer Live, I guarantee that you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 per month. That's a couple of lattes at Starbucks. That's for an entire month. You not only get all of the brand new shows, and you can do the math, 15 to 20 shows a week, 4 weeks every month. Not only do you get all of those shows every single month, but you get full access to our entire archive of shows dating back to 2005. It's 2011, by the way. That's 6 years worth of archives. We've had interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of this business, from Ric Flair on down, all up in the archives right now, all completely searchable. So head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. If you go to the website, on the right-hand side of the page, you can scroll down. There's a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Listen to them. Actually, I think there's four up there right now. There's four different radio shows up there. Listen to them. If you like what you hear, that is a sample of what you can get pretty much every single day. And if you scroll down a little farther, whether you're a subscriber or not, there's information about how to get the shows downloaded automatically to your iPhone, iPod, etc. via iTunes. So if you've got a commute, you can wake up in the morning and the shows from the day before are already on your iPod. You can do this for the free shows and the members-only shows. So head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Before the break, we were talking about the Kung Lee Vanderlei Silva fight. My feeling is that what you need to do is you need to showcase the strengths of the UFC as compared to boxing, for example, or professional wrestling. And with boxing, the first UFC on Fox showcased big, strong, scary heavyweights. Who's the baddest man on the planet in the heavyweight division? If you're not going to do that, then to me, I don't like a fight that you just put in two guys that are going to have a stand-up battle, and they're going to get tired after three rounds, and they're going to kind of throw some wacky kicks that they do damage early, but by the second half of the third round, they're not doing much. And I don't think that's showcasing UFC at its best. I think a fight like the Uriah Faber fight or the Henderson Guida fight, those are fights that show the athleticism. They show some fighting on the feet. They show some awesome groundwork. They show excitement. They show young, explosive guys. I think that's the best thing to highlight on Fox.
Oh yeah, I just never underestimate the general public when it comes to something that might catch their eye first to drag them in into seeing what really makes it everything tick and go around. But you know, it's amazing. Three fights we're talking about, which you know the possibility or debating whether they could have actually been on the Fox show actually take place on this show, which. You know, I disagree somewhat with oversaturation. I mean, you're not legal in New York. You have problems in lots of places. You're still not accepted. If this thing fails, you know, will the UFC be around again? I mean, they have to just basically, to me, really, they do have to oversaturate and create such root strength where this thing becomes basically, you know, a passing thought for people who hated the sport before. At least they need to become apathetic towards it as it moves on. And they have to put their best foot forward, though. And I believe that they do, at least they try to, where, you know, this probably maybe will do 250,000 buys initially. Maybe you were thinking it would do something like that. You know, I think when word of mouth gets out about this show, you could probably tack on another 150,000 buys to it. I honestly believe that. It's shows like this where when you have great shows from top to bottom and you go all out, I mean, they're not going to be great all the time, but you know what? When you have shows like this, there's no oversaturation. When you put on this much greatness, there really is not oversaturation.
Well, I think here's the deal with oversaturation. It's a debate based on how you define that term. You know, if you're a fight fan, listen, I got no problem watching all these shows when they're great like this. I have absolutely no problem. But when you're looking at buy rates that are now at the level they are, and you get reports from the bar where, man, I remember when we used to show up here at 5 and you couldn't even get in, and now we show up an hour into the show and there's no one here. You know, that right there is oversaturation. That right there is the fact that you can't. It's easy to get your buddies together once a month for a big pay-per-view. It's really easy. But when you're calling your buddies every single weekend to get them over, you know, it just that's what oversaturation is. It's too much product for people to keep up with every single show.
That may be the case, but who else is getting 250,000 pay-per-view buys at $50 a pop?
Well, nobody. And that's still great. That's still great.
And their big shows still spike. I mean, their big shows with George St. Pierre, with your Anderson Silvas, with guys like that still spike. Now, they have to create new guys that come around that they can bump up to the 500,000 level. I mean, you have your Rashad Evans and guys like that. So I don't think it's that big of a concern, especially when, too, and yes, they have issues with papering sometimes in Las Vegas, especially. But when they're still rolling into places, and yeah, they have problems in Philadelphia, they've had problems in Newark, they've had problems in some places, but tonight was 13,000 and, you know, a 1.3 million gate. Last week in Anaheim was 11,000 and a $1.1 million gate. I think when you have to look at everything all told in this before, you know, it's like, well, they're still, again, it's not affecting their bottom line. And yes, the hardcore fan has more trouble keeping up with it. The average fan isn't going to watch all of this anyway. They just have to be alerted. The mainstream has to be alerted to the fact when there is a big show, much like it is in boxing, like a De La Hoya fight or something like that, that you make it must see.
Now, hold on one second. When you say it's not affecting their bottom line, yes, it's true. What else is doing 250,000 buys every month on pay-per-view? That is true. But their overall buys for 2012 are going to be down dramatically from 2011. And granted, that has to do with losing some fights, and it has to do with some injuries and that sort of thing. But still, the overall number is going to be down dramatically. So the bottom line is being impacted.
Yes, but okay, and the thing I can come back to with that is look at the amount of main events that they've had issues with, and they were still able to. Yes, it was down. But then you also look at the prospects for the future, too, where you go, okay, you got Brock Lesnar, and now he's healthy. You got George St. Pierre still as the champion. You have Anderson Silva. You're still going to have things. If those guys were hurt or something like that, I'd be a little more apt to go, geez, are we doing 14 pay-per-views next year? Maybe we ought to rethink this. But it's just one of those things. It's a little bit of a downer, but when you look at the overall picture with Fox and with everything else, I think it's some people are a little too hypercritical.
The Uriah Faber fight on this show. Sometimes
awesome.
You watch. Sometimes you watch UFC. The opener, the Kyle Kingsbury fight, actually was a good example of this. Actually, the Kyle Kingsbury fight was second. The opener was no, it was Kyle Kingsbury and Seven Ponder. Anyway, sometimes you watch a UFC fight and it's like, okay, these guys are going in, and this guy's going to try to avoid the takedown, and this guy is going to try to play his wrestling game, and you know, it's like. It's very sporting. There's a strategy involved in it. If you want to see, like, a dude beat the crap out of another dude, like a pro wrestling squash match, then watch the second round of Uriah Faber and Brian Bowles. Brian Bowles is no joke. He's got one loss in his life to Dominic Cruz, and it was in a fight where he had suffered a broken hand. So he's a tough guy. He's a former WEC champion. Went in there with Uriah Faber. Uriah won the first round, but they had a competitive encounter. And then in the second fight, Uriah beat the crap out of this dude. This was like the bully on the playground beating the crap out of the guy in science class. He killed this fool. He just absolutely killed this poor guy. He knocked him down with a shot. He was soccer kicking and kneeing him in the ribs. He guillotined him to death and tapped him out. And this was like, by the time this fight was over, I know that there are a lot of people that don't like Uriah Faber. There's the, Uriah is always getting his title shot. Oh, Uriah is always getting this and that. Fact of the matter is this. Uriah Faber, yes, his record in the last eight fights has not been stellar. However, Uriah Faber only loses to the best guy in the world. Okay? He's either the champion or he's losing to the champion. Everybody else, he beats. And he beat the crap out of this guy here tonight. And when the fight was over, I don't care how much you don't like Uriah Faber. I don't care how much you think he's been handed title shots. There's no way you can watch the second round of this fight tonight and think this man does not deserve a championship rematch, because he does.
I love it. Most people who don't like Uriah Faber are still paying to watch him get beat up. I mean, that's just, and you have to, because why would you not want to watch Uriah Faber fight? He landed a huge right uppercut in the second round, and yeah, it was just a barrage of just fists and knees and elbows, and it's not like Bowles is some, you know, pushover bum. I mean, he's a tough guy, and Uriah Faber just blew right through him. He knew exactly what to say afterwards, which was, you know, it's Dominick Cruz, and Dana White said in the press conference, yes, we're getting Faber and Cruz, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And I hope, for the UFC's sake, and this is nothing against Dominick Cruz, that Faber wins that fight. Why? Because it's probably going to be a great fight, and we get to see a fourth one. And Faber with a title is something, and again, nothing against Dominick Cruz at all whatsoever, is a great representative for the UFC. But obviously, for all of those reasons with promotion and everything else, you know, Faber with a belt being hated by people or being loved by people is probably the best thing for him.
I don't know if we gave the finish of the Kung Lee fight, but it was Kung Lee and Vanderlei Silva. I predicted that Kung Lee was going to win, but Kung Lee is, in fact, 39 years old. He looks 39 years old. He's actually, I don't even know if Kung Lee was ever going to fight again until he was offered this fight for UFC in San Jose, his hometown, where he is a superstar. And, you know, I can make fun of him for looking 39, but Vanderlei Silva, who's 34, looks no younger than 54. He looks like the oldest man in the world. And they went in there, and this was like, I don't know. First round was great for Kung. You know, he did a lot of wacky kicks. He did a spin kick and these spinning elbows and all this stuff that's not supposed to work in a real fight. It was working great. But he's a 39-year-old actor now, and he got tired. And Vanderlei was able to not get knocked out for long enough to zombie his way into the second and third round. And actually, second round. It was second round stoppage. So anyway, he went in there and hard Muay Thai knees. Kung ended up getting rocked, went down, barrage of shots. The referee stopped it. Joe Rogan called it a bad call. He said that Kung was going for a takedown. I watched it, and Kung was done, in my opinion. But it doesn't matter either way. Fight's over. Referee's decision is final. And I guess Vanderlei lives to fight another day.
It was a good stoppage. I saw Vanderlei when I was in New Orleans, and it was just like, when you look at him compared to the guy from Pride, it's just like his, you know, wacky skinny doppelganger from, you know, next door or something like that. Just not even the same guy. But yeah, I mean, hey, Kung Lee, he's only lost to, you know, two fights, and again, he could have knocked Vanderlei Silva out in the first round, and we'd be talking about something else, because he really did rock him a couple of times, and it really did look like Vanderlei, who, again, I don't know how he survives anything. I hope he fights in Japan one last time, and then that's it for him, because I really don't need to see Vanderlei fight anymore.
All right, when we come back from the break, we've got another... We're not going to talk about the whole show. We're going to talk about Ronda Rousey, who is noted. Her gimmick is that she won six straight fights, all in less than 1 minute, and all with an armbar. She was going in last night to Strikeforce against Julia Budd. Could she keep the streak going? We're going to give you the answer after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Michael P. Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Prescott is his middle name, I've been told. Here to talk about Ronda Rousey of Strikeforce, who last night faced Julia Budd. Ronda Rousey 6-0 going into the fight. Every fight ended in less than 1 minute. Every fight ended via armbar. Could the streak continue? Well, in her corner was the great, the legendary, Judo Jean LaBelle, who had a stopwatch. Hit a stopwatch, everybody. Turn that bugger on, and 39 seconds later, Ronda Rousey had dislocated Julia Budd's arm with an armbar. A gruesome dislocation. I should note for those of you concerned that, in fact, she's fine today. The elbow was put back into place. She's going to be all right. But the lesson, everybody, is tap early, tap often. So things like that don't happen to you. But seventh straight win. And it was interesting. Ronda Rousey is absolutely awesome, but in the first moments of that fight, she walked into a barrage of punches right to the face, and I thought, you know, if she gets a championship match, it's, well, actually, she demanded a champion. She demanded a shot at a 135-pound title, which is probably smart, because the 145-pound title is held by Chris Cyborg, who, if she punched her coming in, Ronda Rousey would not have a minute to apply an armbar. But she wants a shot at a 135-pound title. Misha Tate's champion. I say you give it to her. I think it'd be awesome. And, Mike, your thoughts?
I love this woman. Perfect woman. Athletic, beautiful, can talk, has got aesthetics and athletics. She's got everything. And if it wasn't for Sarah Kaufman, she should be getting the fight against Misha Tate. And either way, it doesn't really matter. It shows why you can have women's fights without having deep divisions. And it's one reason I hope Strikeforce stays around, because they'll be able to utilize people like this. Because, again, Judo Jean LaBelle with the stopwatch, if nothing else, for that, with him in a pink shirt, was fantastic.
Aesthetics and athletics. I need to make a shirt. We're going to be back after the top of the hour, everybody. We got to talk about The Rock. That's right, he's back in action today, believe it or not. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next hour, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Spent the entire first hour talking about mixed martial arts. Lots of stuff to talk about. The UFC on Fox, UFC 139, Ronda Rousey, and a lot more. This hour, we're going to talk professional wrestling. Today is the return of The Rock. He's wrestling at Survivor Series, believe it or not. Going to talk about that after the next break. Wanted to make mention very quickly that as of the time that this update is taking place, Matt Hardy is still in jail. Matt Hardy is in jail, everybody. Shockingly, he has been booted out of rehab. They discovered he has been accused of drinking. You can't do that at rehab, I've been told. So he was drinking, and he got booted out. And the entire reason he went to rehab was because he was arrested about, literally, I swear to you, about five times in a one-month span. And one of those was a drug bust at his home. $1 million bond put in jail. And they released him under the condition that he completed rehab. And as a result of whatever happened, he did not complete rehab. He claims he was not drinking. It was mouthwash that caused him to fail. So, yeah, he's apparently been arrested. He is serving time until such time comes when he can post $1 million bail. And this story just sucks in about a million different ways.
Yeah, it does. What do you need, like 10% or something like that? $100,000, yeah. You know what, really, the best thing for him is probably staying in something like that, because obviously it was an outpatient treatment sort of thing where he could go in and out, and you know what, he obviously needs more than that.
Is it really you need 10%? I was under the assumption he needed to post all $1 million.
No, I think you just need like that little bit, and then if you skip it, then they revoke it, and then you're just stuck in jail forever.
Then they bill you because they can trust that you'll pay your bills at that point? Your $900,000 bill?
Well, I don't know.
I'm not blaming you.
I don't
you.
Watch enough of those bail bondsman shows or anything like that. We should have David Schultz on the show. Maybe he can tell us about it.
Yeah, we should. All right, everybody. We'll be back talking about The Rock when we come back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Thanksgiving is coming, Mike. You know what my wife did today?
What's that?
You'll never guess.
No, I won't, actually.
She went to a hockey game.
Possibly be?
She went to a hockey game. Your favorite pastime.
And amazingly, you didn't go with her, did you?
I was watching UFC. Are you kidding me? I'm working.
Oh, okay.
I'm bringing home the bacon. But she brought home the turkey because she did the puck game where apparently you hit the puck 40 feet and you win a free Thanksgiving turkey. 15-pound turkey she won.
Ah, now you have to ask her if she actually went all out and was on skates or if she was just standing on the little carpet thing.
I don't know how it worked, but she was very excited. I don't know. I'll find out and maybe we'll give a report later in the show.
And you deep fry that bad boy?
Oh, no, Mike. We eat healthy here at this house. You kidding me?
So no turducken in the Alvarez residence?
Gracie diet here.
Oh,
all right.
Man.
Survivor Series is coming up, everybody, on a lighter note. What could be lighter than turkey? This show has The Rock wrestling. What do you think this show's going to do, Mike? Because I am so not feeling this show today.
Well, much like when you overdose on turkey on Thanksgiving, you're probably going to get sleepy and fall asleep at some point during the pay-per-view. Because you've probably been doing that during Raw, which is absolutely amazing considering you have Kevin Nash, Triple H, Mick Foley returning at this time, The Rock, John Cena, the John Cena and The Rock teaming up together. And we're talking probably 250, maybe.
250.
And that may actually be being really, really generous, but
are you saying 250 worldwide or just in America?
You know what? I'm going to give him credit. Oh, man, I can't give him credit because it's not working. The average person at home is picking out flaws in all of these storylines leading up to this show. And I just, you know what? I don't know. 250 worldwide? I guess so. I mean, 107. I don't know. It should go do 175,000 buys. It's hard to fathom that when The Rock is, they've screwed up The Rock.
I will be surprised if this show breaks 175, which is just astonishing because my brain tells me, Ryan, obviously the show's going to do at least 200. The Rock is coming back to wrestle. He's teaming up with John Cena. It doesn't matter if you think the build has been horrible. The Rock is coming back to wrestle and he's teaming with John Cena. How could it not do 200,000 buys? But then there's that part of me that watches a show every week. And you got to think about this, you know. I've lived in the same place, the same city my whole life. So I have so many friends here that I grew up with. And a lot of those friends, we were all huge wrestling fans, obviously, in the 90s. And I remember, like, in the 90s, in the early 2000s, I'd go over to my buddy Craig's house for pay-per-view parties. And, you know, there's a good 10 people there watching these pay-per-views. And now I go over there, and it's me, Craig, and Vinny. And that's it. And you think about, okay, well, The Rock's coming back, all right? How many people do you think have contacted me asking me to come over to watch this pay-per-view? And think about all the old friends I used to have who used to watch wrestling together. How many do you think have called me to come over and watch this pay-per-view?
Probably none.
Two.
Wow.
Two people.
I'm really surprised by even it being two.
Two people, you know? And the key is, you know, these two people have asked if they can come over. They're not adding a buy. You know?
Yeah.
They're not adding a single buy. So I don't feel this. I feel, you know, your average show is doing about 110. And Money in the Bank did really good for a B show. It did 139. So I'm thinking, all right, that show, think of how much people were talking about that show. And granted, it was much of the internet audience, not your casual audience. And but I mean, really, I mean, okay, so it did 139 for Money in the Bank. You know, is Rock really going to do massively above 150, 175? Is he really going to hit 200? Are they really going to get 70,000 extra people to buy this pay-per-view? Maybe they will. You know, there's that part of me that goes, of course they will, Brian. It's The Rock. Look at the numbers for WrestleMania this year, you know? But
That's WrestleMania. And in these economic times, I mean, you saw The Rock for 3 hours, or at least watched the three-hour Raw. You know he's probably going to be around because, obviously, they're leading into WrestleMania. You know, everybody knows they got the Royal Rumble coming up. Are you going to spend $50 just to see The Rock? They didn't give you any reason to watch The Rock do anything. You put him in with two impotent guys. The Miz and R-Truth have been beaten up the whole time again. I never, ever, ever thought that I would say you should turn Cena, but with the way this has gone, I mean, what are you supposed to do? I mean, the Rock and R-Truth and The Miz both being on Cena, is this really going to make people boo? Is this going to make people any more interested? They need to shock something, and the problem is they do all of these little hotshot BS things, and this has been an amazing year bookend. You know, we were talking about, you know, the possibility of The Rock going into WrestleMania last year. We had The Miz as a paper champion. You had Wade Barrett, and they were going to start getting away from Wade Barrett as, you know, and it wasn't long after this because they did the Cena mask thing in December, but it was like, remember when Barrett was supposed to face The Undertaker? And look at the position he's in. You had Sheamus, you know, getting beaten to death. You have a million guys on the roster right now getting beaten to death. I mean, we talked about The Rock going into WrestleMania and how it hurt The Miz, and it's like, well, you know what? They got a whole year to figure something out, because when they have a year, when they really think about things and put their mind to it, WWE is absolutely remarkable. And what have they done? We're going on a year now, and we're going to lead into the next WrestleMania, and they got nothing. They got nothing. They got no steam, no movement. The hardcore fan, the 10%er that they always make fun of, are frustrated. At least they're still watching and bitching about it, because the average person is turning their head. Lance Storm, who's backstage at shows, now says he DVRs the show. And, you know, I don't know. I wonder if he watched the show last week, because I know he was, if there was going to be insults towards Jim Ross. And again, I mean, just, and they didn't embarrass Jim Ross bad, but again, it was just a waste of time. Why is Michael Cole's talents not being used as manager? This whole thing from top to bottom is, it's pathetic. It's really pathetic, and I know they made $108 million in the third quarter, and that's not something that you can sneeze at whatsoever. I just wonder 10 years from now if they're going to be making $108 million a quarter, because they're not laying the groundwork for anything for the future.
Yeah, I'm going to argue my own point now. The $108 million talked about, this was the most financially successful wrestling show of all time, WrestleMania this year. Made more money than any other wrestling show ever in the world, in the history of the world, this WrestleMania. And reason for that was Rock, you know? And if you look back at that show, Rock wasn't there to wrestle. Rock was there to be the guest host of the show. And because of Rock simply being there as a guest host, it was the most financially successful WrestleMania of all time. That is entirely due to The Rock. This man draws money. And what's interesting about it is the match at WrestleMania. If you ask people, what was the main event of WrestleMania? You know, there's a fair number of people that wouldn't remember it was John Cena and The Miz. They just remember that Rock and Cena had their deal at WrestleMania. But it was John Cena and The Miz. Nobody cared about John Cena and The Miz. The whole key was, are Rock and Cena going to have a fight at WrestleMania? You know? And that resulted in it being the most financially successful WrestleMania of all time. Now, if you look at the main event of this show, which is Miz and Truth versus Cena and The Rock, what have we talked about for weeks now? What geeks The Miz and R-Truth are on television. It's not about Miz and R-Truth. They're two bodies in a match with John Cena and The Rock. And the whole key to the Survivor Series build is, in fact, exactly the same as the build for last year's WrestleMania. Are Rock and John Cena going to get in a fight? And that WrestleMania, with that alone, was the most successful WrestleMania of all time. So, again, when I look at it from that perspective, the idea of the show only doing 175,000 buys is preposterous. You know, if this show did 175,000 buys, when you look at it from that perspective, that is a disaster of the history of the world proportions. You know, that's I don't even know what to say if the show really does that number. But there's another part of me that goes, there ain't no way the show is doing 200 or more. It's just impossible. Look at the television. So this is going to be the most interesting number of the year.
Oh, yeah, and it's okay for them to be bodies, but just like The Miz coming out of WrestleMania, he was killed going in, he was killed going out, he was an afterthought, didn't help him at all. You could have came up with some story, any story, just to do it, to keep the thing going and add some interest to it instead of the cornball crap that they've done.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, the Survivor Series card, only here, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Michael Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Before the break, I said, after the break, we're going to be talking the Survivor Series card only here at WrestlingObserver.com. That's actually a lie. People talk about the Survivor Series card everywhere. But You're not going to get the kind of breakdown you're going to get here at Wrestling Observer Live. Anyway, this card, the main event is Rock and Cena against Miz and Truth. Or, more appropriately, Rock and Cena versus two men. It's like that old squash match on Georgia Championship Wrestling. Such and such against two men. That's what we got here tonight. And I am expecting that Rock and Cena are going to beat the two men. I'm still expecting that Rock is going to, like, hit the people's elbow on somebody, and Cena will throw him out of the ring and steal the pin. I entirely expect that to happen. What are your thoughts on the finish of this main event?
Like George South and Gene Ligon, or Pete Doherty and Barry Horowitz, or the Mulkeys, as we get R-Truth and The Miz. And yeah, well, Cena and The Rock should beat them, and they should go away, because if you are going to turn Cena, it really shouldn't be tonight, then they should just... Obviously, they're gonna. I would have some interaction between the two. I don't know if they, you know, run into each other, or if there's some sort of, you know, miscommunication or something like that. But you know, I can see, you know, something happening where Miz and Truth get the pin. But it would just be, I just can't fathom them doing that, because even though The Rock wouldn't care about doing it, he really wouldn't whatsoever. And really, The Miz, maybe a good idea for The Miz to do it so he can brag over and over about getting his revenge from WrestleMania and all of that stuff. Just don't think they'll go in that direction, and they'll have, you know, they'll take the superhero approach and have Cena and Miz win, or Cena and The Rock win. It's just a matter of what they do afterwards.
What do you expect them to do afterwards?
I don't know. Do you think they'll do the Mega Powers handshake and then The Rock bottles them, and, you know, then we have Raw on Monday?
That's possible. That is possible. I don't know. Maybe a pull apart with security. I don't know where they're going to go with this. I hope they've figured it out. You know, it is Saturday. They've still got three more script changes before the pay-per-view. Sunday morning here. All right, Alberto Del Rio and CM Punk for the WWE Championship. And these guys, for whatever this is worth, are scheduled to have another match next month, so they could hold off CM Punk winning the title until next month. The plan has been for a while for Punk to win the title, because God knows they've given Alberto Del Rio a great run, and he was of such value to the Mexico tour that they spent all, 8 months planning to put the title on him for that thing, and then they did nothing with it. But may not take place tonight. May take place at TLC. So at some point, presumably, it's going to happen unless they change their mind again, which they do regularly. What are your thoughts and your predictions on this match?
I think Alberto will go over and win. I just, you know, why in the end of the pay-per-view to go, or what, one or two, at least one before the Royal Rumble. So, I mean, it can wait. I don't know, unless you're going to have Brodus Clay come out and be so pissed off he can't get on the air that he, you know, attacked Alberto forever blowing him off in the first place when he jumped from SmackDown to Raw or something like that. And I don't know. It would make more sense, though, for Alberto to beat Punk in some sort of nefarious fashion, nefarious way, and then they go on to have the rematch a month from now. What are you going to do with either guy for that month before the Royal Rumble?
I don't know. They'll do some skits on Raw. What's everybody do?
Well, you know what? Alberto is one hell of an actor. I don't know if you saw his layout in Hombre.
In Hombre magazine?
Okay, that may have been the best part of Raw.
I need to get myself an Hombre magazine someday. That'd be the pinnacle of my existence.
That could be true, actually. That you were you there talking about, you know, all of the work that you've done, the great podcasting, Wrestling Observer Live, After Dark?
That's right, how we started the newsletter apparently before IATA, which I don't even know how that's possible, but apparently it is. Yeah. Mark Henry and The Big Show for the world title. You know,
Mark Henry.
What's kind of funny is, we've talked about this a million times. It used to be that, like, you'd have a match and dudes would run in, or dudes would run away, and so you announced, well, next time they're going to be in a cage. No one can get in or get out. Now, it's like they had a perfect reason to do a no-holds-barred, falls-count-anywhere match. Because last time they were in the ring, they broke the thing. So they could say, well, this time you ain't going to be in the ring. You can't break the cement. I suppose they could. They're 1,000 pounds. But anyway, nope, it's just a match in a ring for a title. Mark Henry versus The Big Show. There you go. Maybe they can break the ring a second time. And then next time they'll have to do a match in on cement, on metal.
Very disappointing. The show's taking place in New York, in Madison Square Garden, not taking place in like the Black Hills of South Dakota or something like that, so they could actually just be on the side of a mountain where there's only one pass, and they could be like two rams, and they just keep slamming into each other until one fell and rolled down. And actually, you know, Big Show's got a history of that. As you remember, he did fall off the top of the Cobo Arena when he was the Giant.
Why don't they climb the Empire State Building?
Yes, he's able to take that fall, so he'd be okay. But I think Mark Henry should win this, because why should Mark Henry not win this?
Empire State Building, Mike.
It's going up there and swatting things away, and they both battle. It's like Godzilla and Mothra up there.
Mm-hmm. Wade Barrett, well, which one's the one who flies is my question.
Well, that's a good point.
I think Big Show is slightly more aerial in my experience. Team Barrett, which is Cody Rhodes, Wade Barrett, Jack Swagger, Unico, and Dolph Ziggler, will be facing Randy Orton, Sheamus, Mason Ryan, Kofi Kingston, and Sin Cara in a traditional Survivor Series elimination match. Who would you... Well, I guess this is too many men. I was going to say, who do you expect to win? But just pick a team, any team.
Not who to go. I'm going Team Orton.
A safe call.
Randy Orton and Sheamus. Why not?
Randy Orton and Sheamus are...
survive because, again, I would see, yeah, I'd figure out Orton and Sheamus both survive.
Beth Phoenix versus Eve in a Lumber Jill match for the Divas Championship.
They're having a Lumber Jill match?
Mm-hmm. All the girls are out there to get a payoff.
Oh. Beth has got to win then, because somebody's going to have to trip up Eve.
And we've also got Dolph Ziggler defending the title against John Morrison. After all of the attempts to get himself booked on this through this apparently was his own angle. His petition was an angle he came up with that they, I don't want to say they didn't okay, but this wasn't their idea. So they gave the shot to John Morrison, and I would not be surprised if, in fact, they did the angle where people are so interested on Twitter to see him in this match that they insert him. It's three-way. Then you could pin Morrison.
I guess that would be a way of getting Dolph out without losing the belt, although he did beat Sin Cara on SmackDown, apparently. So, I guess they could be done with the whole, you know, the doubleheader Dolph Ziggler thing where he just constantly loses. I mean, he's lost to Mason Ryan, he's lost to John Morrison, he's lost to Zack Ryder. I'm going to go with the ass-backwards logic that they actually keep the belt on Ziggler because Ryder does something to screw up the thing with he and Morrison.
Do you know how many Twitter references are going to be on that show tomorrow?
It's brutal. It's really brutal, and it shows the lack of finger on the pulse of the thing, you know, the pop culture thing they want to be so bad. It's really bad.
Let's see what's trending on Twitter right now. What important things in the world are trending on Twitter? Let's take a look here. Right now, Tom Bender.
Tom Bender
is trending on Twitter, as well as East River.
Alrighty.
As well as Access Denied.
Okay.
Writing all this down.
Not exactly a fun Saturday night, it sounds like.
Yeah. iTunes Match.
Alrighty.
So apparently these things are all making gobs and gobs of money. Nicole Alvarez. My God, my sister's trending on Twitter. I couldn't even get myself trending. This isn't fair.
She's got more talents.
Happy National Taco Day is trending on Twitter.
By the way, I love that commercial with the guy doesn't get the text message in time and calls everybody out for having the taco party. Love that commercial.
Some fellow named Brian Schmidt is trending on Twitter. I'm going to Google, is Brian Schmidt rich? Let's see what it says. There's no evidence here on my Google search that Brian Schmidt is in fact rich after trending on Twitter. How about that? So, yeah.
So you're saying that even though you may actually end up making a big deal out of yourself so much where people actually have you trending on Twitter that does not actually equate to tangible dollars in your pocket?
No, it doesn't.
Huh.
I don't understand how that's possible, because from my understanding watching Raw, that must be why.
Yeah, the whole Twitterverse thing. I heard it a few times on Monday night. I think The Rock may have said it a few times in his promo.
How about Twittertainment?
Yeah. Okay.
Hashtag Survivor Series for those of you that want to get in on the fun.
Fun.
Yeah. All right. Before we head to the break, let's discuss another quick topic right here. We didn't talk about this last hour. Any thoughts on the UFC lawsuit trying to sue their way back into New York?
Great idea. Great idea. Because even if it fails as far as getting something repealed, I mean, odds are I think it's going to be tied up where it's going to be New York does not want to go ahead to continue to pursue it because they're going to get pressure. I mean, the way the thing, they're using the law's wording against it, which is great because you have the Fox right now could come out and say, well, what are you going to do? Press charges on us because Channel 5 in New York showed the show. I mean, they've just done a good way where it may not work, but it was a really good way to try to circumvent, because they know they're not getting that law passed, so I thought it was a really, really good idea to do it the way they did, and if it fails, it fails, no big deal, but if it works, and I think that it can, and I think that it will, it was a really good idea.
All righty, we're going to do a break. When we're back, more wrestling and MMA news, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Wanted to throw in a little bit of excitement in that last segment. But now we're back. And if you love this show, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Daily radio shows. Did you know that you could listen to this show every day? I do shows every single day at WrestlingObserver.com. We do 15 to 20 total radio shows a week. It's not just me. I do a show with Dave Meltzer. I do Figure Four Daily. I do the Brian and Vinny show. Mike Sempervivi does a show. The Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Mike, tell them about your show.
Well, Japanese wrestling was our muse for this show, but we end up talking about everything. Talked a lot about Ring of Honor and why it works for us old people. I'm 35. Adam is 30. We grew up with wrestling in the 80s and syndicated TV, and Ring of Honor is, to me, a great representation of that and a really good TV show. So we talk about that. We talk a lot of Japan and actually hockey as well, although neither one of us has won a turkey at any point in the shootout.
You've never won a turkey at any hockey game you've ever gone to?
I've not, and you know what? The amazing part is, you know, as I said, growing up on syndicated TV, I remember the Team Challenge series from the AWA, and I remember Jake the Milkman Milliman winning that turkey and then having Larry Zbysko steal it right away from him. And ever since that day where I watched that episode and then later on watched the Rangers play the Capitals that night, I've always thought to myself, if there were two things around this time of year that I could tie together and make my life complete, it would be Jake the Milkman Milliman's turkey and me shooting it right past the netminder and winning the Stanley Cup of Thanksgiving.
My God. Well, this is the kind of talk you're missing every day, everybody. We got shows covering the history of wrestling, the history of mixed martial arts, current wrestling, current mixed martial arts. Everything you can imagine is available at WrestlingObserver.com. Not only do you get all of these new shows that we're talking about here, think of this, 15 to 20 shows per week. You're looking at 60 to 80 shows every single month. 60 to 80 a month! Not only do you get all of those new shows, but if you sign up, you get our full archive. Every show that we have ever done, dating back to 2005, is in the archives right now. No extra charge. $10.99 a month is all you pay for everything. Head up to WrestlingObserver.com right now and check it out. We've got a listing of our latest three free radio shows. If you listen to them, if you like what you hear, sign up. And jump into the archives. We've got more stuff than you can imagine. I also like to plug Figure Four Weekly. It's a newsletter I've been writing since 1995. We've got a full-color PDF that comes out every single week. All of the news in wrestling and mixed martial arts all over the world, plus TV reviews. It looks awesome in iBooks on the iPad, if I do say so myself. So if you've got an iPad, or really any pad, that can display a PDF, it is your lucky day. You'll love this newsletter on your iPad or whatever it is that you read your PDFs in. So check that out as well. And we got a full archive of 100 hundreds of issues. You can go back and read some past issues. Always a good time. Let's jump back into the news here. We, of course, have a lot of it. Turning Point was last week, the TNA Turning Point pay-per-view. This was almost guaranteed the least purchased TNA pay-per-view of the year. This was the show where they gave you the main event in the last 30 seconds of the go-home show. AJ Styles and Bobby Roode. Nobody cared about the show. Nobody cared about the match. It was very sad, and it wasn't much of a show.
No, it was not, and I actually feel bad under all of those circumstances that AJ Styles, being as gnarled up as he was, actually went 20 minutes. If there's a, you know, any excuse with the way that ankle looked when he put it up online, if there was ever an excuse to actually have a 10-minute match where, you know, you could actually increase Roode's heat by having, you know, everybody hate him for just going nuts on Styles' foot and actually beating him and having him talk about it in an arrogant way afterwards, maybe would have been a good idea, but they didn't go that direction. And Roode beat Styles in a match that, nothing wrong with it, but it's certainly most certainly going to be forgettable.
Show's been better of late, Impact. I'm not as down on it as I've been in the past, but last couple of weeks, it's just kind of been a show. I have not been blown away by it. The Roode Storm stuff was the best. I think that I think Bobby Roode is great, but James Storm to me is like the biggest star in TNA. He's so great. And they did bring him back. The original idea was that James Storm was going to be out of action selling an injury, perhaps until lockdown, which is in April, which I thought was an absolutely idiotic idea because he was just starting to get hot. But he's already back. He's going to be facing Kurt Angle in the next pay-per-view. I think he's the best character in TNA right now. I think he's awesome. And hopefully we see more of Mr. Storm.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to me. It was just such a dumb thing. They could have drawn this thing out for a lot longer. And in the way that they did it, I mean, the execution of the way that Roode did it was good. But you think about the business that they lost because they had two people that their fans, they were homegrown, they were relatively untouched as far as being, you know, having any sort of slime on them from failures in the past or anything like that. I mean, they were striking while the iron was hot, Storm, and I mean, it just, they could have drawn this out longer, and it's too bad they didn't. But yeah, I mean, if James Storm isn't taken care of incredibly well in the next year, they're just, again, I mean, they've done so many ludicrous things, you just can't keep count. But, you know, again, Roode and Storm are the two most important things that they have, and they really need to take care of them.
Now, we didn't mention this when we were talking about Raw, but the Raw rating from this past Monday night, a special three-hour edition of Raw. This is kind of one of those things that when you take into consideration, I know that many times there's very little correlation between ratings and buy rates, but the return of The Rock to television for free, one would think he would have done better than a 3-2.
Not really. Why?
Because it should have?
It should have. Yes, you're right, it should have. But again, it's amazing. The Rock. We talked about it for a year. They can't screw this up, and they've screwed it up. It's not like he's even been around where it hasn't been special. It's just the whole they have such a malaise going over them right now that it is self-caused, that it's just that has gone to the viewer. And, you know, there's football on. There's lots of other things on. You got the DVR. Did I miss anything? I know The Rock was coming back. What'd I miss? Oh, I'm going to go back and rewind and watch where he lays out Mick Foley at the end of that stupid-ass segment. Okay, I'm going to fast-forward to the end. Okay, they beat up Truth Miz. Cool, out. Why is that? You know, I'm really not surprised. I mean, it's just they've basically made the Rock somewhat impotent as far as what they could really be getting out of him. I'm not trying to discount him altogether. That's why I think these pay-per-view numbers are actually going to do far better than they deserve to do. But with that said, it's not special. It doesn't feel special. They're not even trying to make you buy into anything. You know, again, you go to see The Rock in the movie. Why? Because he's the vehicle of the movie. That's why you're going to go see Gina Carano in that Haywire movie. Yeah, she's the vehicle there, but if it's just her standing there looking pretty, it doesn't really matter. You got to give them something competent or at least something to try to get people to bite into, and they haven't done it. So what? The Rock's on Raw. Big deal.
Funny you should mention that. Haywire with Gina Carano. Early reviews are good movie And Gina does a great job.
Yeah, it's, you know, remember Cynthia Rothrock back in the day, the mid-90s, where these are just like, you know, it looks like a amped up, you know, on steroids version of just your typical, you know, one woman against the world. You know, the government hired her, and now she's, you know, they turned on her, and now she's going to take out everybody. And it's a simple, goofy thing, but sometimes the simple things work when the explosions are in the right place, the lead is right, and you have a good supporting cast. And they've, you know, they broke out Michael Douglas, I guess Antonio Banderas has got a cameo. They've actually loaded up people around her. The guy who did the direction of it is into these big types of blow up movies and everything, and you know, found something in Gina Carano, who definitely does have a presence and is very beautiful and has got a great body, but doesn't have that typical Hollywood starlet body, so it makes her unique, and yeah, good for her on it, and you know, too bad for seeing her fight one more time, but good for her face and good for her pocketbook.
Any thoughts on the passing of killer Carl Cox and thoughts on his career?
You know, I didn't get to see a lot of him, but talking to Les Thatcher and Rich Tate, who, you know, Rich saw him a lot in Georgia, where he was in his, not his prime or anything, but it's where a lot of people remember him. I remember seeing the PWI pictures of him hanging out with Bobby Heenan, and he was holding the kitchen sink because Bobby Heenan said he's bringing everything, including the kitchen sink. And he was able to, and what Les was saying, he knew him in his real name before he came Killer Carl Cox, but he was very influential towards Dick Murdoch. I didn't know he had, you know, basically, you know, given Murdoch the brain buster, and he did comedy in his matches that was believable with his character, and it wasn't over the top, it wasn't, you know, as animated as it is now or what it's become now. He was very smart about it, and he played his character incredibly well. And, you know, for a long time in Texas and Georgia and in places that he went, he was a very, very effective person.
Also, sad news, the Ugandan giant Kamala, after a battle with diabetes, was forced to have his foot amputated. And Kamala, I don't know if you saw the video of Kamala in his hospital bed when he gave a message to the fans. I think he did it for TMZ, actually. But a very uplifting message, all things considered, having had his foot amputated. But very, very sad news. Everybody who watched wrestling in the 80s, there's not a single person in the world who watched wrestling in the 80s that does not remember Kamala, the Ugandan giant. And it's very sad.
Yeah, it really is. You know, diabetes is, you know, a really nasty thing. But, you know, it's, you know, obviously, you know, people talk about Luthez and Jack Briscoe and Ric Flair and people like that. But one thing in professional wrestling, everybody always loves characters. And, you know, Kamala was just a very racist, a very unique character that you know, nobody cared about Sugar Bear Harris, the wrestler, but everybody knows Kamala, and he did a great job with it, and again, one of those timeless pro wrestling characters.
Eddie Alvarez lost this weekend, Mike.
Yeah, I won a lot of money this weekend on the UFC. I never would have thought about putting on a bet, no matter what the odds were, against Eddie Alvarez, but yeah, Scott Chandler.
Never bet against an Alvarez.
That's... I feel sorry for Bellator tonight. I mean, again, Bellator usually, for the most part, when I've seen them, always has good cards, but they actually had to push this one towards 7 o'clock or whenever it was. But I'm definitely going to have to catch the replay because I can't believe it. He was tapped out in the fourth round by rear naked choke. And for those who are unaware, Eddie Alvarez is... He's one of the few guys out there who's not under UFC or Strikeforce contract. Under a Zuffa contract, where you can say he could walk. Eddie Alvarez was one of those guys you thought could walk into the UFC and do damage. I still think he could. I just never thought he'd lose in Bellator.
I want to ask you very quickly before we head to the break. You got about 90 seconds here. During the UFC event last week, it's kind of funny. The event ended. There was a press conference, and then everybody immediately flooded into the press room to watch the Pacquiao fight. And what were your thoughts on that fight?
It was a, you know, damn good fight. I mean, that's, you know, they could fight again, and it's going to be great, but damn it, nobody wants to see it. You know, people complained about the decision in the fight, you know, and people giving it to Pacquiao. Well, all three of their fights, I mean, if you're a Marquez guy, you would say Marquez won all three of those fights. They have been back and forth wars. They have been great fights. Manny tried to go for the knockout, but when it comes to Marquez, is just kind of his kryptonite as far as finishing guys. He just can't do it, and Marquez is a hell of a fighter. But again, unless this leads to Mayweather and Pacquiao, it's completely worthless. And again, I don't care if it went 60 seconds or not. Last weekend, as Pacquiao's fight was going on, it doesn't matter. That was the mythical end. You know, that was the end of the mythical fight sport of boxing leading North America. UFC is the thing now.
We're going to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the show with a little bit more news. And don't forget, in moments, Survivor Series is kicking off from Madison Square Garden. Back in just a moment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, in moments, going on the air is the WWE Survivor Series pay-per-view from Madison Square Garden in New York City. And it is your last chance here to make a buy rate prediction for this show.
Yeah.
Come on, Mike!
215,000 buys.
Worldwide? Or 215 America. Domestic. In
America.
America
will come out shockingly.
Oh, my God. That is a bombastic prediction right there.
It ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
You know what the worst part is? If it did happen, that would be even worse because WWE would think what they're doing is actually working.
I believe that last week on the Todd Martin Show, I told Todd that there was no way that Kung Lee was beating Wanderlei Silva. I guaranteed that Kung Lee was going to win.
Uh-huh.
I was wrong. But
yeah, I was 4-1 in my picks. How'd you do?
I did terribly. I did better than Oliver Kopp, I think.
Oliver's always looking for that upset.
He was the only one that picked Brian Bowles, I believe.
That's true.
He was incorrect there. But I guarantee that there is no way this pay-per-view does more than 200,000 buys domestic. But I'm still sticking to my prediction, just because that's the kind of guy I am. This will do between 150 and 175 in North America, and 2-something worldwide. That is my final prediction here as the show is about to go on the air.
Well, you know what? I hope for the sake of Survivor Series it does, because I'm sick of the name. It's not the name's fault. Leave the name alone.
That's right. All right, everybody. We're going to wrap it up here for today. As noted, Survivor Series is about to go on the air. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com starting right now. So if you're not getting the show, or if you're getting the show and you want to follow along, head over there, WrestlingObserver.com. And later on tonight, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be back with a brand new Wrestling Observer Radio, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com, talking about Survivor Series, The Rock, and more. We are out of here. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.